Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Washington podcast with your host, Vincent Cavallari. Sink these shoes, quit clacking down some dead end
street. Take these shoes and make them fit. Good day, everyone. Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Mill Creek View podcast. I'm your host, Mill Creek City Councilman Vincent Cavallari, and this is the Mill Creek View Podcast, Washington edition. As always, we're excited to have you with us. We ask that you check us out at mcview.us. mcview.us. Please subscribe, like us, comment, do whatever you choose. We'd love to hear from you, but definitely do subscribe. The subscriptions are picking up, but tell your friends, please. And, of course, we promise to make this a good use of your valuable time. In that same promise, our mission is to continue to bring you great guests. Guests with their fingers on the pulse of your community and guests you want to hear from and people you need to hear from. And tonight's guest is no different. A radio talk show host extraordinaire and former longtime Washington resident Kirby Wilbur will be joining us. And we are, of course, excited to have him, and we'll bring him on in just a moment. And remember, here at the Mill Creek View podcast, our mission is quite simple, to always endeavor to make this a place where dialogue and debate will thrive and survive, and the truth will always have a home, and that's my pledge to all of you. Friends, most people would agree that the western United States is undoubtedly one of the most beautiful coastlines in the world. America's west coast is blessed geographically with every advantage you could possibly want. But why would residents be fleeing in droves from such a beautiful place? Several years ago, I began writing about Democrat states and the mass exodus taking place. States like Washington, Oregon, California, they're simply hemorrhaging businesses and tax-paying residents. According to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, more than a quarter of a million people moved out of the state of Washington between 2021 and 2022, reversing decades of trending growth. And not to be outdone, almost a full million have left California and moved to other parts of the country in that same time frame. The reasons given do vary from person to person. However, most all cited rising crime, the high cost of living, and unrelenting taxation as the primary factors. Friends, these states have lost so many residents that they're now in jeopardy of losing additional congressional seats in the House of Representatives. It appears their goal is to supplant American citizens in these regions with illegal migrants. I mean, how else would you explain the situation at America's southern border? It should be apparent to everyone living in these states that the middle class has become what I would call the hunted, and in more ways than one. Democrats have now dedicated themselves to fleecing the once thriving American middle class, and now the people are speaking with their feet as they head for refuge in Republican-led states. Progressive leaders in these states have taken these once thriving nirvanas and turned them into breeding grounds of despair. Good-paying jobs have become scarce commodities. As people continue to pack up and leave, companies as well due to overtaxation and woke policies. Tesla, Oracle, Palantir, Hewlett-Packard, Regents, just to name a few, are some of the mega-sized companies that have decided to pack up its 60,000 jobs and head for Republican states. It seems, friends, that wokeness doesn't bode well for a company's bottom line or a shareholder's expectations. To make matters worse, progressive lawmakers are now seeking in these states to raise taxes on the existing residents that can't afford to escape the madness. It's no longer feasible or even possible to financially survive in these states. A recent study by U-Haul reported that the top five states to see the greatest influx of new residents, Florida, Texas, Tennessee, Ohio, and Arizona, which coincidentally are all led by Republicans. It seems that lower taxes and family values, as well as public safety, do have a place in American culture. However, just not in Democrat states. Friends, we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, radio talk show extraordinaire Kirby Wilbur will be joining us, so please stay tuned. We are going to be right back. Friends, the way we grow this show is through you. If you like what you hear, please tell 10 friends, like us, share us, do it everywhere. Whatever you choose, please keep tuning in and please subscribe to mcview.us, and we promise you will enjoy the show or your subscription back. It don't matter just one bit how much money's in the bank. It's all about the time we spend and those we have to thank. Thank all those good guys and gals for being such good friends.
If you like what you're hearing here, you're going to love the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast, found at all your favorite podcast outlets.
It's only money, not worth the paper it's printed on. It has no warmth when you hold it in your hands.
Friends, welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for sticking around. As I promised, it's going to be a good show. Tonight's guest is one of those residents that I spoke of in my opening monologue, someone that was forced to leave their home state, a place that they loved for reasons I talked about just a moment ago. The now Texas resident had spent the vast majority of his life in Washington state until woke policies and overtaxation forced him and his family out. He received his BA from the University of Washington, and subsequent to that became actively involved in Washington state politics. He served in numerous capacities over 35 years, including chair of the Washington State Young Republicans, chair of the Washington State Republican Party, delegate to seven Republican national conventions, four Washington State Republican conventions. And with all of his political activism, he's most known for his radio talk show on 570 KVI Seattle. For over 20 years, he graced the airwaves with honest and unbiased reporting to the masses and was the counter-narrative to progressive Marxism. He met his wife Trina while working on the Ronald Reagan campaign in 1980. They have two sons, Adam and Nathan, who are both thriving, and we are excited to bring him on. Welcome to the show, sir. Welcome, Kirby Wilbur.
Thanks, Vince, very much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, I've admired your show for years, and as I said when you logged on, I haven't been nervous doing these shows, but I am now. I want to be good enough to stand toe-to-toe with you. So
you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Slight case of laryngitis. I think I've got the flu. I think it was 94 degrees on Monday here, and today was 53. So the weather's changed radically, and I think I've got a slight flu. Other than that, I'm fine.
I thought Governor Abbott didn't allow laryngitis in Texas. What's going on?
I wish. He hasn't gotten around to banning that yet. We haven't shipped it to another city like we do our illegals. It may be coming, though. Don't give him the idea.
So you're living in Texas, and I kind of alluded to that in the intro. What part of Texas is that?
We're in McKinney, which is northeast Texas, about 30 miles northeast of the city of Dallas. We're in what we call North Texas. Texas is much larger than a lot of people think. Texas, at its widest point, is about 900 miles wide, and at its widest point north-south, about 500 miles. El Paso, Texas, in the southwest corner of the state, is closer to California than it is to Dallas.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very huge state, and you got to kind of get used to that while you're here. And a lot of people say Texas. Well, what does that mean? Well, we're in the northeast corner in part of Texas called Collin County, which is very conservative, and the weather's pretty nice, and we like it.
And I'm from what I understand from the map, most people in Texas, except for perhaps Austin, are swing toward the conservative viewpoint, correct?
Yeah. We have Austin, which some of us call the Seattle of Texas. They've got a very liberal city council. They defunded the police. They have a lot of homeless and drugs. Downtown Dallas, downtown Houston can have some of the same problems. But overall, a very conservative state. Our last statewide elections were 2 years ago. And all the Republican incumbents got at least 10 points, if not 10-point margin, won at least 55% of the vote. And the Democrats have not elected a statewide official since 1994.
Well, you know, my wife, I've had a lot of experience with Dallas. My wife travels there a lot to work. Her corporate headquarters is down there. So any chance I have to catch a Mavericks game or a hockey game, it doesn't matter. I try to jump on the bandwagon of a free hotel room, and I love it. It's some of the greatest people. They're pure salt of the earth Americana.
One thing we noted about Texas when we moved here, nicest people in the world, anywhere. They will strike up a conversation with you in line. They will come over and greet you to the neighborhood. They'll ask if you need anything. We have a community page, Facebook page in our community, and people are always going on there saying, hey, I need onions. Hey, I forgot butter. And people respond and say, I'll bring you some. I'll bring it over to you. We had one resident get sick one Friday night. He needed Pepto-Bismol, but his family was gone. He couldn't drive. There were 12 people that jumped on the Facebook page of the community. Six said, we'll bring you some over. Six said, I don't have any, but I'll go to the store for you. And this spirit of community is real and true, and it's something that I think has impressed us most about Texas.
Yeah, we are, I don't want to get too far in the weeds of this, but we are in the throes of planning our, I don't want to say escape from Washington, but it seems that many people are doing that. And that's really the header for today's show is voting with your feet. You're one of the 400, you and your family are one of the 400,000 Washingtonians to leave. Tell the listeners why so many people are leaving Western states, Washington, Oregon, California.
Well, as you noted, Vince, I've been involved in Republican politics for a very long time. And after fighting for 40 years or 45 years to have the Republicans be successful in Washington, the trends just weren't that way. And I decided in my later years and my family's later years, this was a family decision, not just me. We decided we wanted to spend our sunset days, if you will, and for my kids, their future days, in a culture, a state, an area that's more conducive to our values and more supportive. I also thought maybe it was time that younger leadership take over politically, that being the old guy, maybe my ideas weren't so good anymore. But we had a comfortable nest egg. We looked around at various states, and Texas just fit the bill for what we were looking for.
And the numbers really bear that out. Texas, Florida, a couple of others are really absorbing most of the, your tax base is really low. I mean, there's just the weather, climate's good, so many variables that make it attractive. With these states, absolutely hemorrhaging residents at this point, and I think in the opening monologue I talked, it's roughly 1.1 million Washington and California alone just the last couple of years. What's the future without a tax base in these states, in these progressive states, Washington, Oregon, California?
Well, I'm afraid that there's a couple of different ways to look at it, Vince. Number one, most of the people leaving are red voters, Republicans, conservatives. So the chances of the Republicans winning are probably more slim than they were because their people are leaving. The Washington State Republican Party last year said that they'd estimated between the election of 2020 and the election of 2022, 90,000 identified Republican voters had left the state. Well, they're having trouble winning elections as it is. And you have people moving in who tend to be Democrat and liberal, young, single, professional, IT. And they tend to be liberal at that stage of life. And you have the conservatives moving out. So number one, you've got a shrinking voter base to win elections. And number two, the people who are leaving are not poor. They're not lower middle class. They're established people who've decided that they don't want to be there anymore. So you're losing a tax base, you're losing capital, and you're losing voters. And the Republican Party has to find a way to win given those things going against it.
I received an email from a citizen just this week, and I get a lot of them, and this one was significant because I pride our city in Mill Creek, Washington, on being a very proactive public safety city around the chaos. And she asked me, she's telling me basically that she feels unsafe, that we need to step up police presence. And so I'm just thinking how that happened so quickly within 3 years, first of all. And I'm sure that's not the case down in Texas. How explain what it's like living in a community like that, where six will go to the store and six will, bring it over.
Well, one of the things that really drove us out was the Floyd riots in 2020, when they pillaged Bell Square, because I know Kemper Freeman, owner Bell Square. We did a lot of shopping in Bell Square. We lived in Redmond, and so Bellevue was like our city as opposed to Seattle. And when we saw the Bellevue Police Department allow these thugs to rampage through Bellevue Square, my wife looked at me and said, "Time to go. Time to go." We'd been thinking about it, but we had no timeline. And I think what happened, you had this rapid deterioration after the Floyd riots, after the defunding the police department, the anti-police attitude, and judges and prosecutors not pursuing charges, letting people go, the whole no bail movement. That accelerated. And so I think it accelerated the fleeing. Now, here in Texas, and we live in a pretty conservative part of Texas, every county official is a Republican. Our county sheriff looks like a sheriff, Jim Skinner. We went to a meeting with him our first couple weeks here, and he got him and said, "Folks, my jail is full, and I'm proud of that, because when my jail is full, your streets are safe." And that seems to be a tenet of law enforcement missing among many people in the Northwest, that if you put bad guys in jail, your streets are safer. Texas has a reputation of a lot of people carrying guns. I don't know how legitimate that is, but I think that puts a damper on crime too, because you never know.
Sure.
When you're in a house. We don't have silly restrictions on police pursuits. In some of the Democrat areas like Houston, you have liberal DAs, and you have people who are promoting, no bail, release on PR, but that's very limited in certain areas. And we don't have the craziness here I think you have in the Northwest, especially in Seattle and elsewhere. So it's very different. We live in a community that contracts our local sheriff for police protection, but we feel perfectly safe here. And I have no issues going downtown Dallas when we want to. We're going anywhere else is just completely different. Because, here, bad guys go to jail. We had a porch pirate ring in our neighborhood. The UPS driver worked with the county sheriff. They're in jail. They're not on PR. They're not released on lower cognizance. They were thieves. They were caught stealing, and they didn't ask how much they stole. Oh, that was only $50 worth of stuff, so that's okay. We don't have stores locked down with all the razor blades locked on the shelf and things like that. You don't have people breaking into the store and just clearing stuff out and walking away, because they know they'll go to jail. They won't say, you only stole $800 worth of stuff, so we won't put you in jail. No, they'll go to jail, and they know that. So it's just very different.
This is the Democrat nirvana that they're peddling, right? Call the new normal. I mean, they're seeing San Francisco is a pit of what it was. I happen to go down there a couple times a year as well. I loved that city. Even as liberal as it was one of my favorite places to go. And it's an absolute shell of itself. And Seattle is moving in that direction. Let's just call it like we see it. Did the Democrats, are they killing these cities?
I think they are. I don't think it's deliberate. I think they're ignorant. They're not aware of what they're doing. Some suggest they are aware. I don't think they are. I just think they don't know what they're doing. There's sympathy for the underdog. There's sympathy for the criminal. There's sympathy for the, quote, underrepresented, I think, drive them to this. And they really don't believe that punishment works. They really don't believe that you need a police force. If you remember, Vince, about 20 years ago, we passed a series of three strikes and you're out laws, which put me and John Carlson, my co-host on KBI, helped with this. You committed three certain felonies, you went to jail for a very long time. And all of a sudden, the crime rate dropped. But when the crime rate dropped because the bad guys were in jail, the 10% that commit 90% of the crimes, people start saying, well, the crime rate's so low, why do we have so many people in jail?
Exactly.
They didn't understand the crime rate was low because there were a lot of people in jail. So the legislators started tweaking with the law and amending it, so maybe that felony wasn't that bad. And all of a sudden, the crime rate's up because certainty of punishment is not there anymore, and the bad guys aren't in jail. You see that with the killing of this college student in Georgia, this young woman, the nursing student that was killed by an immigrant.
Lakey Riley.
Yeah.
Lake and Riley.
She'd been in trouble with law. He had been in trouble with law. He had actually had a warrant out for his arrest in Georgia. And Athens, where the University of Georgia is a very liberal city in Georgia, unlike most of them. But he'd been in trouble with law. He shouldn't be here. And she's now dead. And no one's standing up to say, hey, we hadn't had open borders, this might not have happened. If he hadn't been in the country, this wouldn't have happened. And so they have these policies that are exacting a cost on cities and people, causing people to leave. And our governor is trying to fix that by shipping all these illegals to the sanctuary cities like Denver, Chicago, New York. They want to be sanctuary cities, send them. I have not suggested the governor send them to Seattle because I still love Seattle. I love all my people. I don't want to do that to you. But they should pay the price. They want to be a sanctuary city. Great.
Our you asked border, for it, you got it.
Our border region is being ravaged by drugs, criminals, crime, people traipsing through private property crossing the border, flagrant disobedience of the law. I don't think Texas should have to bear the cost of that policy. So we're going to spread it out and share it. And hopefully you see some liberals like Mayor Adams, New York, all of a sudden say, hey, maybe we should be tougher.
Yeah, he's still a half stepper, though. I mean, he's not all in. He's not all in. He's still handing out $10,000 and $15,000 debit cards. So he's an accomplice at this point. And to your point, Kirby, her name was Lakin Riley. And today the president spoke for the first time 8 days after her murder and wouldn't even say her name. See, I'm perfectly willing to lay the blame right at the feet of this administration of this and many other deaths. We have deaths in Colorado Springs. We've had the young lady in San Francisco killed by illegal migrants. This has happened for the last 4 years. We're just not hearing about it, and the media is silent. So is it fair to put the blame at the feet where it belongs?
I believe that. Texas has tried to tighten up the border. And they've been taken to court by the federal government, and the Supreme Court's ruled that immigration is a federal responsibility. And the Supreme Court, in several decisions involving Arizona, Texas, have basically limited the ability of the states to regulate the border because it's a federal responsibility of the Constitution. So if the Supreme Court says of the federal government, they're not doing the job, then it's their fault. And there is no way we should simply allow people to walk into this country. You've got disease, you've got crime, you've got everything else. I don't blame people for wanting to be here. If I lived in some of those countries, I'd want to be here too. But along with the decent people that are fleeing oppression and poverty, want to make something of themselves, you've got the bad guys coming in, fentanyl, drugs, murderers, criminals. Venezuela's emptying their jails. All their criminal gangs are coming up here. Now I've got a soft spot for Venezuelans because they've had to put up with socialism and communism for years. They've ruined their country. And I know some very nice Venezuelans here in Dallas that I would welcome because they want to be American. But along with them, we've got the gang members coming. And crime is down in Venezuela, Vince. You know why crime is down in Venezuela? Because all the criminals are here. And so, yeah, it is Joe Biden and the administration's fault. And if you look back, President Trump tried, but probably didn't do as much as he could have either. And before him, President Obama didn't do as much as they could. There's no reason to have an open border. Sorry, it doesn't have to happen that way. And they're at fault.
Governor Abbott, in my opinion, has done a fantastic job standing toe-to-toe with the federal government at every level. And utilizing the invasion statute of the Constitution, basically saying that I can put together a block of states to defend a state if it's an invasion. He's declared. I noticed that they're not pushing back during this election cycle on the invasion piece of it. So I'm thinking it's starting to turn, and the feds have kind of waved the white flag a little bit without surrendering to their base. But have Democrats essentially, because of the I believe the way they consistently vote Republican in Texas, the way they consistently carry so many electoral college votes, have Democrats just declared war on Texas?
I think Texas is a symbol for everything the Democrats don't want. We are an energy-driven state. We're the only state in the country with our own energy grid. Every other state in the country is tied up to a regional power grid. We are our own power grid. That has problems sometimes, but also a lot of benefits. What Texas culture stands for, what as conservative as we are, I think that makes a target for us. You hear people deriding Texas all the time, talking about how bad it is. And I talk to people all the time, Vince, about Texas, and they'll start talking about it. I said, I don't live there. That's not where I live. You've got a whole twisted version and vision of what the state is. So I think that because Governor Abbott's been outspoken and our legislature's been outspoken, our attorney general's taken prison by the court, I have no doubt that is an incentive for them to try and punish us a little bit more.
You know, can I pop in here? This is Steve, the producer. Kirby, we just purchased a rental house down in Grand Prairie, Texas.
Ah, nice neighborhood.
And my son lives down in Dallas. I forget which neighborhood he lives. He moved down 2 years ago, and he's in the energy sector. But what I noticed is, one, you still have plastic bags down there. Two, your gas prices are very low. And three, you didn't just declare war on caged chickens, because now here in Washington State, the bill just finally went into enforcement. Now you can't buy eggs at the store that are done by chickens that are in cages. And so the cost of eggs have gone outrageously high, as has our gas prices, because we got carbon tax on all the refineries and no plastic bags. So you have to buy a paper bag when you go to the store. So I can tell you, folks, and we were there for 4 days fixing up our house. We met two of the neighbors. We said, hey, this is us. We bought this. We're going to rent it out. And the neighbor was really nice. We got all of his information and got the other neighbor. And it was like, people are just friendly. So you do definitely have a great environment. We've spent time in Dallas, and we've met numerous people that are friends of my son. So I have nothing but good things to say. So we got a half of a foot down there already.
Well, next time you come down, get my number, give me a call. We'll go out, and I'll show you the best part of North Texas. I'll show you McKinney, the other neighborhoods. I'll show you why people like it down here.
I will.
I'd be happy to do that.
I will.
Too. And you too, Vince, if you ever get down here.
Absolutely. I love Texas.
There's something about this culture. Do you know in Texas they have a Pledge of Allegiance to the Texas flag?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
And the kids say it every morning in public schools. They pledge allegiance to the American flag and the Texas flag. You will see so many houses and cars with Texas flag bumper stickers and Texas flags flying in the front yard. I never saw a Washington State flag fly anywhere but a government building, right? But down here, people fly it all the time, put on their bumper stickers. They're proud to be a Texan. There's a pride that comes with that. So you help each other, and you're friendly to each other, and you go out of your way to help people. And chickens aren't a big deal down here, though, see, because we're a beef guy. We're
Oh, I've had
so
plenty
of bother with the chickens all that much.
Well, it's for the eggs, but I have had plenty of barbecue every time we come down.
Washington do something stupid like that. I mean, I keep track of what the legislature does, and they just keep getting crazier and crazier.
Yes. It's nonstop, and it's almost like every time, I was saying this to someone the other day, it's like every time you pick your head up out of the water, another Democrat bill or legislative session is there to shove it right back under where you're stuck holding your breath, waiting for air.
About Texas, we only have a 30-day session in the legislature every 2 years.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
We don't meet every year. Now, the governor can call them back in an emergency session if they didn't deal with something the governor wanted to deal with. And they got called back last session many times because the governor wanted educational choice and he wanted some election integrity bills. And legislature was kind of hesitant to go along with him on that. But we only meet by law once every 2 years. And when the legislature's in session, no man's life, liberty, or property is safe. So we don't have them in session very often. So our lives, liberty, and property tend to be a little safer because they're on session.
You mentioned Governor Abbott. How would you rate the job he's done?
I would give Governor Abbott a B. There are some things that he, personally and politically, I have trouble with. But he's a good governor. We had a $38 billion surplus in this last session. Most of it was given back to the voters. And Governor Abbott was leading that drive. Poverty tax relief, money for border security. We allocated $6 billion to spend our efforts for border security, to pay for more Texas Guard members, to pay for that fence, to pay for the other states that send guardsmen down here. Iowa, Florida, Georgia have all sent National Guard people to help our people along the border. And so we are spending money on that. In Washington, if you have a budget surplus, they find new programs to spend the money on. And in Texas, they give it back to us.
And so, I mean, I think he'll be running for re-election, so I'm sure the money might find its way back to the electorate at some point during the next session here. But you mentioned the border again. So 14 states have decided to assist Texas in protecting the border. And I just think that's incredible. And going back to what you said about the kids saying Pledge of Allegiance and having the Texas flag in the school. And I started really just like reflecting back when I went to school. It was the same thing. My favorite class was history. I had a teacher that gave a crap. He loved teaching it. He loved talking about World War II. He loved the Civil War. He loved all that stuff. And it's just pure Americana. And the kids don't understand it. They don't have a clue these days in what they're learning in schools. And we'll get to that.
One thing on that, Vince, if I may.
Yeah, please.
If you're a disabled veteran in Texas, you don't pay property taxes.
Wow.
You're exempt if you're a disabled veteran. If you have become disabled in the service of your country, we don't let you pay taxes. And we have a separate veterans bank that's set up to, under the state, to assist veterans with real estate purchases if they maybe don't have the income or can't get a regular conventional loan. We have a state bank that specifically works with veterans to finance properties. So we take care of our veterans in the state.
Yeah, so I will continue to fantasize about Texas and my exodus at some point. And it's actually a toss-up because we are looking at Arizona, and if I didn't get beat out on a house about 3 years ago, I would have probably bought it already. But here and there, I like the politics, and I want to go somewhere where I'm comfortable, and I want to mingle with American citizens again. I just don't feel like I'm doing that again, or just people that love America in general. The economy in Texas, and then I'll get off Texas, and then I want to beat up Seattle a little bit. So the economy in Texas, how is the economy? You are footing the, $6 billion for border security? I mean, that's just an astonishing number.
The economy is booming. North Texas, where we are, what we call North Texas, is the number one region of the country for people moving in. Now, Florida's number one state. But we're the number one region. People really aren't moving into Houston or El Paso. They're moving into North Texas, which is Dallas-Fort Worth and the suburbs around it. Unemployment is under 4%, and people are looking for work. Every place I know has help wanted signs up. There's work here. We've got a large number of Fortune 500 companies that have moved here because of the tax situation and the business situation. We have low taxes, low regulation, no income tax by state constitution. Specifically says no income tax. So it's not something that the court could get around like they're trying in Washington with a capital gains tax. No. In fact, we've got a lot of legislators saying they want to abolish the property tax because they think with the economy the way it is, and just the sales tax, we could provide enough revenue for state government. It's very easy to set up a business here. It's not difficult at all to establish a business, and we're booming. I tell people, if you go to Kansas and look to the horizon, you're going to see wheat. If you go to Iowa, look to the horizon, you're going to see corn. You come to Texas and look to the horizon, you're going to see houses because they're building them fast. They can't keep up with demand. We're going to very large apartment complexes lately because we just can't build the houses fast enough. And it's incredible. It's just a great place. And business-wise, Texas is doing very well. I think they're the number one state for the last 5 years in job creation.
That's
part
incredible.
Part of that is Fortune 500 companies moving in.
And so you mentioned taxes. So I believe that there's not a corporate tax on corporations there. So why wouldn't you move from California? Why wouldn't you move from Seattle, where they just seem to be doing the opposite, really making it very difficult to do businesses? The last number I saw is that small businesses in Washington since 2020, we've lost 37% of them. And again, it's just a roadmap to bankruptcy. Let's talk about Washington a little bit. You did mention something about there's an initiative about taxing, payroll tax and whatnot. They're trying to put, we have six initiatives about to go forward. Three of them are about to be heard by the legislature. I think it's actually started today, as a matter of fact. Are you familiar with those, or have you?
I am. Brian Hayward, who I know, organized this to get these six initiative ballots on the ballot. And I've been following the story. And I know a lot of people are upset, Vince, that the legislature's not going to have hearings on all of them. But you know what? The legislature's not going to pass them. They're not going to ratify them. They're not going to put them in law. It's going to be up to the people. So it really doesn't matter what the legislature does. Let's get to the election. And then the advocates of these positions are going to have to spend money on advocating the initiative. I think in the past, a lot of initiatives, like a lot of Tim Iman's initiatives, Tim had the money to get him on the ballot. He didn't have the money to advertise, promote them with radio spots and yard signs and all the rest of it. And a lot of those initiatives lost because the special interests, teachers unions, SEIU, they're going to spend millions on these campaigns to defeat them. So I'm hoping that Brian and his people have got a plan to spend some money. Now, if you pass three or four of these, it's a good sign that Washington will be turned around. This whole idea of this payroll tax, that you're paying for disability insurance when you get old or senior care, but you can't take it with you. And there's a limit to how much it will pay you. As one who has a relative in attended care in Washington, that measly $30,000 will go nowhere. It will not pay for much care at all. This whole idea, they have to take care of you and you have to opt out rather than just say I don't want it. Police pursuit. Really? You can't chase bad guys? I mean, I'm sorry. The taxes, capital gains tax, that's an income tax. They get it in, they'll build on that, and you wind up with state income tax. So it's best to nip these ideas in the bud. I think it's a great effort. I hope they pass overwhelmingly. If they don't, I would tell people in Washington, if these initiatives don't pass, that's the sign it may just simply be too late. Because you keep hoping that somebody hits bottom. It's like an addict, Vince. Yep. When an addict hits bottom, that's when they say, I have to change. But they have to hit bottom. Well, this is the chance for the addicts to turn around and change the condition and direction of the state. If they don't, it may be too late.
So, again, that's the Rubicon for me, too, is that if we can't get these initiatives or at least a nice chunk of them passed, then to me there's no hope. And, again... running for office and doing all those things. I guess we're going to keep on doing what we do, but there's an old saying that you can't fix stupid. But
right.
But let me ask you this. Do you think that, let's take one of the initiatives, police pursuit you just mentioned a moment ago, they're going to hear that on the floor. So it's my understanding that if the House passes it, even just a simple majority vote, that the governor cannot, doesn't have veto power because of the way it came to the floor. So don't you think that the Democrats are in a spot right now with something like this, especially with the carnage that's being laid during the process?
This puts them on the spot. And I think the good thing about having to come to the floor for debate, you're going to get sound bites of these legislators explaining to people why the police should not pursue bad guys. They'll get spots, audio cuts of these guys talking about why they want to tax people's income. You'll get audio cuts and sound bites of them saying why you can't take care of yourself, the state has to do it. And if the initiative promoters are on it And if the Republican Party is on it, by having them come to a hearing, you're going to get all the other bites you need to expose these people to the voters. And then if the voters say we like this, then you all know it's time to leave.
Exactly. Last I heard is that the public commentary started today, I think, on police pursuits. I've been at work all day, so I haven't had a chance to phone in to some folks. And you mentioned Brian Haywood a moment ago. We're going to have him on the show here pretty soon, too. He's done some amazing stuff. He was talking at an event recently how that whenever you have an initiative, you can have money to throw at it, but if you don't have the ground game, if you don't have the volunteers, the signature gatherers, the sign hangers, and all the above, and continuing, like you said a moment ago, to educate the people, then you're dead in the water. He was actually surprised that he did it. He got these all six on the ballot, I think he said, for $7 million. So now the job is to, what's that?
Investing $7 million of his own money in the future of the state.
Wow.
It's pretty incredible.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Our church was very active in that.
Your listeners and people out there on the street, I've invested $7 million. Can you invest a couple of hours? Can you spend a couple of days walking precincts, talking to people, working on the campaign? Can you spare $25? I think if Brian gave $7 million, I think the people out there really care, concerned, can give some time and some money and effort to make sure these things pass.
And the other one I think that they're going to have a tough one to really paint themselves out of the corner on is parental rights. Is one of the initiatives on there is a parent's bill of rights, essentially. And they've taken small bites at the apple here, but how is it? I mean, explain the contrast of raising a child in Texas now that you've seen it, right, versus raising a child in Seattle or Washington State in general. Things like Senate Bill 5599 already passed into law.
When we're down here and people say, why did you move? And I've used the example of the legislature passing law saying that if your child runs away because he's afraid that you won't allow him to transition, or because you're afraid you won't allow him to be gay, that you're going to oppress them, if they run away to a state facility or another facility, they're not under an obligation to call you and say, we have your son, we found him, because you're anti-trans or anti-gay. When I tell them that, they don't believe me. What? The government's interfering between a parent and a child? Yeah, they are. Now, we have people here in the state who push these things, but they're typically voted down. We have teachers who are working to get certain ideas in school, but they're going against state law and against regulations, and they're not doing it with the open approval and acceptance of the state government. Our state government's pretty conservative. Even a lot of the Democrats don't go for this. We've had a lot of kind of start with COVID, with the mask mandates. We had local school districts vote down mask mandates because the voters going to the meeting said, we don't want our parents, our kids to be masked. We don't need masks. And the kind of started on COVID. Then it went to, what are you teaching? CRT, critical race theory. That's been banned on the state level. There's still people that try it, use a different name, but we're very aware of it. And parents down here, I think, are much more aware of school board events and school board meetings and school board happenings than they are back there, because they just care. We have really good schools here, and I think that people want to keep those.
Yeah, I mean, when you think Texas, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is high school athletics and Friday night lights. Those are the things that pop into my head. But there's one bright spot that I did take from COVID or the pandemic. Was the fact that parents were able to peer through the lens of a Zoom meeting and see exactly what their kids were being taught and the type of propaganda they were being spoon-fed. And in Texas, they've said no, of course, and to your point, and in Washington State here, it's just gone off the rails. I mean, critical race theory is still being taught. Kids are being taught to hate one another and hate their parents. And so, I mean, where do you see this all going?
Well, I think ultimately it depends on the demographics of the state. One of the problems you have in Washington, I think you have a lot of single people, a lot of unmarried people, a lot of people.
Yes.
In the city of Seattle, there are more dogs as pets than kids.
Mm-hmm.
School enrollment's declining continuously. because the people moving in are single, high tech, high income, or dinks, double income, no kids. And people who don't have children don't see things the same way as those who do. And so as your base of voters shrinks and turns to have kids in school who care about these things, it's easy for someone with no kids to say, I care about that, but it's not impacting them directly. They don't see it. And so I think parental rights in Texas, a lot of kids, a lot of people have kids. A lot of Hispanic families have kids. It's an easier issue to impact down here because parents with kids tend to be against all that stuff. You mean people with no kids, they don't have a direct stake in it. So it's not a big matter to them.
Yeah. And to me, it comes down to if you don't have morality built into you and decency and humanity, you're just not going to find it. You're the people that we need to steamroll over. That's right. The entire reason I ran for office. Let's talk on a national scale a little bit here. Sure. Does Trump win the presidency in 2024?
You know, tough question. Tough question. Because in many cases, President Trump is his own worst enemy. He alienates people. The juvenile name calling, you know, Nikki Haley's a bird brain. And this, and people around him, like Laura Loomer and Brandon Dilley, who trashed DeSantis viciously, suggesting that Mrs. DeSantis faked her cancer so he gets sympathy of the vote, all sorts of things going on. And so it's not just President Trump, some people around him. He will need a united Republican Party to win. And Joe Biden, if he's the opponent, I think he can beat Biden easier. But keep in mind this, Vince, which party nominates first? The Republicans.
Yep.
And I have great fear that the Republicans are walking into a giant trap because it's pretty apparent watching Joe Biden. He simply is not up to it. Everyone knows that. And he would lose straight across. But once the Republicans nominate Donald Trump, Joe Biden steps down. I've become convinced my health will allow me to do this job. And you get someone like a Gavin Newsom or somebody brand new who's more youthful, more energetic. And they take Donald Trump on his tactics, the bird brain. And I don't think President Trump has done enough to bring new people in. He hasn't reached out to people. He's particularly alienated DeSantis and Haley supporters. And you know, by having run for office in politics, you need every vote you can get. Right. You can't afford to alienate anybody. You can't go out of your way. Like he has, I think Carrie Lake did in Arizona, where she said, if you're a McCain Republican, I don't want you, leave. Can't do that. They haven't learned that lesson. His policies were incredibly successful. We need those policies now. But I'm afraid he hasn't done enough to bring new voters in. He can't constrain himself from using names. He's got to shape up a little bit. Because I think the Democrats, that would be a trap, be hard to beat. Now, if Donald Trump runs against Joe Biden, there's no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump wins. I'm just not convinced he's going to run Biden.
I'm in the same camp as you, and it's unfortunate that Donald Trump couldn't have been a little bit more magnanimous in the moment and maybe gotten out of the way of his own ego and just be presidential. He may not have that in him, and his policies are sound, and your point about alienating a lot of people is 100% accurate, but the polls show that he's up 15 points for minorities and millennials. So apparently, see, I mean, is there a balance here? Are the issues just so in people's face right now, whether it's the issues of critical race theory in schools or the border or the economy? People just don't have money in their pockets. Are they just choking the life out of people that they might just, and it's what I believe, is that people will just abstain. They'll sit this one out. If they can't hold their nose for voting for Trump, they're certainly not going to vote for Joe Biden.
Right. I think it's very possible. This will be I'm tired of voting for lesser two evil election.
Yep.
Because lesser two evils is still evil.
Yep.
I've seen some people talk about a bumper sticker that we had in 2020, we're screwed. 20, because they didn't like either choice. We've got to remember as Republicans that most people in this country are independent. They're not loyal to Republicans, not loyal to Democrats. They have some Republican ideas, some Democrat ideas. Right now, all the ideas are on our side. It's the economy, stupid. Mm-hmm. All right? You've got the economy going for you. You've got the border going for you. You've got parental rights going for you. Everything's going for the Republican side. But Donald Trump is having to spend a lot of his money on legal fees. His daughter-in-law wants to be co-chairman of the RNC and has said every penny we get we'll spend on Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump, without a Republican Congress, without a Republican Senate, won't be able to do what he's going to do.
Right.
And so we've got to remember this. We've got to take the big picture. And I'm hoping Joe Biden's the nominee because I think we can beat him. But I hope Donald Trump at some point is a little more generous, magnanimous to his opponents and says, we got to come together and save America. We got to come together and save this country. We can't be divided. But you go on social media, his people like Laura Loomer and Benny Johnson, who I know personally, and Brendan Daly are out there saying, oh, death to all the DeSantis people. They're traitors. You know, DeSantis this, Haley that. You can't turn off voters. You didn't vote for you. And I fear that will happen. It will end up with a low turnout election, and the Democrats will turn out enough.
What are your thoughts on RFK? Does he make a difference in this election?
I don't know, because he'll need some money. He appeals to different segments. Very anti-vax, very anti-COVID lockdown, which appeals to people on the right. Same time, very much environmentalist. Very pro-gun control, appeals to people on the left. And I don't know if he will convince enough people, he has enough credibility to be to be credible. We haven't had a credible third-party candidate in a long time. Ross Perot got 19% of the vote in 1992, and everyone suggests he threw the election to Clinton, because Clinton got 43%, Bush got 38%. And so a lot of people saying, you know, that was the difference, might have been. He might be able to be the difference, but I think there's Biden more than Trump.
You think it helps?
Voters aren't going to vote for Kennedy just because he was anti-vaccine anti-COVID lockdown, unless that's an issue. Because we got to be honest, Donald Trump shut this country down.
Yes, he did. Yep. And there's a lot of us that have not forgiven him.
Right. And it was Governor DeSantis, it's Governor Kemp who opened up, and Governor
Abbott.
Who opened up the country.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he criticized them.
Yep.
He said, you're going to kill people. And this is just conveniently erased from the memory banks of so many people in the MAGA movement. No, he shut down the country.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but he came into the job not wanting to buy into the swampian people, to use his words, and then he ended up buying into the swampian people, and so I think that's the contradiction or the hypocrisy. But so you mentioned just a second ago, and I want to touch on this because I think it's really important. You mentioned the fines he's facing and criminal allegations. Did we eclipse a threshold normally reserved for banana republics by kicking in his door in Mar-a-Lago?
I think the prosecution of Donald Trump has been malicious, in many cases without justification. This incredible fine on him for supposed fraud in his business deal in New York City, what, $400 million plus interest? Never in the history of jurisprudence has there been a similar case with a similar penalty. He's being penalized because he's Donald Trump. I think the missing documents, I was concerned about that. But I don't think they had to break it down, the door. I don't think they had to do the force that they showed. I think they've gone above and beyond being forceful with him. And what they don't understand, or maybe they do, that makes him more popular. Every time he's indicted, every time he's called a criminal, every time some DA says we're going to get him, he goes up. Because people sympathize with him, and I totally understand that, but it should take more than an indictment to qualify you for the presidency. And the Democrats are digging their own grave, I think, because somehow they think this is going to stick. It's going to be a bad thing for him. But he's higher in the polls now than he was before they started to indict him.
And his fundraising is more robust than it's been before. So every time they effect an arrest or try one of these nonsensical charges, it goes up. So I got one more question because we're running out of time, and I'm so disappointed. I've got like five pages of stuff I want to talk about. So I'll just leave it with it is. So based on what you just said there, isn't it fair to say that even with his bravado on the dais, Donald Trump, isn't it fair to say that Democrats created MAGA?
Yeah, I believe that. I believe there are two things. The Democrats' overreach and the failure of many Republicans to stand up and fight.
Yes.
Because what you see is people call Trump a fighter. Now, he's a loser. He lost 2018, lost 2020, lost 2022, and he lost the popular vote to Hillary. The Electoral College elected him. So he has this image of fighting for you because he's ferocious, stands up, calls names. I'm not going to take this. So the failure of a lot of Republican leadership to either stand up and fight or explain what they were doing to people hurt because they're looking for someone who's going to help them fight and win. And then the Democrat overreach, the obvious overreach, we've talked about many cases of it in our short time here. Those things combine to make Donald Trump a credible candidate.
Hey, thanks so much, Kerb. I had so much I wanted to talk about. I'm sorry I didn't get into your radio career and stuff. I've got two pages on that. Okay. But
I'll be back when I don't have laryngitis.
Exactly. We have to go. But thank you. Thank you You're so welcome. Much for being a great guest and really a great patriot. Can people follow you online?
Yeah. I'm on Facebook. Just at Kirby Wilbur. I'm on X for a minute, Twitter. I just got back on Twitter like 2 months ago because I've been off for a long time. And it's a lot worse than it ever was, Vince. It's either MAGA people or Palestinian people calling each other names. It's different. And then my email is very simple, KirbyWilbur@Hotmail. And I still fill in on KBI from time to time. And I always post that on Facebook. So yeah, and I'm always here to help. People have questions about Texas. People want to talk about politics. That's what I do. So, yeah.
Well, we love hearing you, and we love having you. So any parting shots before you head out?
Keep the faith. America is not done. America is stronger than people think. The American people will come through. Sometimes it takes time. But when the American people are turned on, when the American people realize what a special country this is, what the threats are, I would not want to be on the other side. I really have faith in the American people. Sometimes it takes a while, but I have faith, especially down here in Texas. My faith has grown, meeting Texans. So you and Steve ever get down here, let me know. But no, keep the faith. Never give up. Never give up.
True words have never been spoken. Thank you so much, Kerb. We appreciate you. God bless you. God bless your family, and God bless Texas.
You bet. Thanks so much. God bless America. Thanks, Vince.
All right. Folks, we will be right back. Please stay tuned for the closing monologue, or the way I see it, after a short break. Friends, welcome back to the show. I really hope you enjoyed today's show, or at least got something out of it. What a great guest. I've been a fan of Kirby's for many years. I'm hoping it comes out on the broadcast as much fun as I had doing his interview, because he's truly a patriot, truly a good man, and someone I admire and certainly respect. Friends, why do Republican-led cities and states have less crime, less homelessness, better education, and more equal opportunity for its citizens, while progressive cities have crumbling infrastructure, rampant drug use, chronic homelessness, and poor public education? Ask yourself some simple questions. Would you voluntarily send your kids to public schools in Democrat cities if you had a choice? Would you invest your hard-earned dollars to open a business in a progressive city? Would you even feel safe about going out to dinner in a progressive city? Would you be comfortable using public transportation? These answers, if you're honest, really tell you everything you need to know, because states are laboratories of democracy and people will ultimately vote with their feet. I like to use California to make my points, not just because they're easy, but this applies to all progressive-led states. How is it possible that a state or a region with every possible geographic advantage is leading the nation in crime? Is $64 billion, with a B, dollars in debt? Is under siege by illegal immigration? Or has 5 million of its residents that live at or beneath poverty? Last year, murder records were set in 16 American cities, but none of them had a Republican mayor. In sharp contrast to states like California and Washington, citizens in Texas and Florida are enjoying a better quality of life, better public services, enhanced public safety, and more freedom to pursue happiness. This should be embarrassing to Democrats. People are fleeing these cities in droves, wherever they're in charge. Republicans didn't cause any of the problems these regions are facing, and that's the stark reality. There's no Republican mayor of Portland or Seattle, D.C., Los Angeles, Chicago, Baltimore. There's no conservative governors in California, Washington, Oregon, Illinois, New York. It's progressives and their failed policies. They're the poison pill. They continue to push initiatives like diversity, equity, and inclusion, global warming, reparations, illegal immigration, legalized drugs, none of which are popular with the American people. And Democrats, perhaps they should explain why, if their policies are so wonderful, why are so many people voting with their feet and getting the hell out of there? Republican-led states have given American citizens a new lease on life. More importantly, they've shown that freedom and prosperity are still popular with the American people. I'll leave you with this quote from Benjamin Franklin. He said, and I quote, "War is when the government tells you who the bad guy is. Revolution is when you decide that for yourself." Friends, that's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Thank you so much for tuning in. Once again, I'd like to thank Kirby Wilbur for taking the time from his schedule to join us today, and thank him for really just being an incredible longtime servant of the people. Kudos to him for making a difference in his community in Washington and in Texas. Thanks to Steve, the producer, for all the work he does behind the mic and getting us on the air. Lastly, I'd like to thank you, the Mill Creek View audience, for listening. It's no easy trick bringing you the truth in today's America, but as I always say, I'll endeavor to do so forever and ever. So until next time, I'm Mill Creek City Councilman Vincent Cavalieri, and I wish you all God's peace. Take us home, Steve.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.